Well, yesterday, the Supreme Court disappointed everyone on the far left by ruling 9-0 that actually states can't just randomly take presidential candidates off the ballot. And they did so for a couple reasons, as we discussed yesterday. They said that, first of all, states don't have the ability to remove federal candidates because federal candidates are candidates for federal office. And second, they said that if you are going to define insurrection under the 14th Amendment, that has to be done by Congress, not by some rando at the state level. Regardless of the rationale, the 9-0 decision has made people very, very, very angry on the left. They believe that they understood the law. And by understood the law, they mean that they thought that they finally had Trump. Every time they think they have Trump, it's like the ending of a Scooby-Doo cartoon. Like, we unmasked him. Oh, no, we would have gotten away with it if it weren't for those darn kids. And then that's legitimately every time they try to get Trump, they end up being unmasked as fools. And this means that they then have to expose what their actual agenda was in the first place, which was, of course, not to bar an insurrectionist from higher office. The purpose was to get rid of the Republican likely nominee, foregone nominee, the person who is currently leading Joe Biden by an outside the range of error amount in all the national polling. So yesterday, the Colorado Secretary of State, the person who initiated this entire stupid process in the state of Colorado, a person named Jenna Griswold, she said that, well, you know, now that the Supreme Court has said that we can't just remove Donald Trump from the ballot, democracy is at threat. I mean, democracy may in fact collapse because people might vote. Now, I know what you're thinking to yourself, which is, hold up, people might vote, so democracy is at risk. That is legitimately what people on the left think about Donald Trump. Donald Trump might win, therefore democracy is at risk. We have to stop you from voting because we have to save democracy. Here was the Colorado Secretary of State yesterday.
First and foremost, I would say it's good that the court issued a decision. Americans have been voting all across the nation in early voting in those Super Tuesday states, including here in Colorado. And Coloradans and Americans deserve to know whether Trump is a qualified candidate. My larger reaction is disappointment. I do believe that states should be able under our Constitution to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists. And ultimately, this decision leaves open the door for Congress to act to pass authorizing legislation. But we know that Congress is a nearly non-functioning body. So ultimately, it will be up to the American voters to save our democracy in November.
Oh, no, the American voters might have to save our democracy. You mean by voting? Wow, I know. What a concept. Now, the reality of the situation is this is a stupid legal theory in the first place. It was put out there by some anti-Trump people on the right and a bunch of anti-Trump people on the left. As the Wall Street Journal points out, the disqualification push against Trump was embraced by an ideological mix of legal scholars and Trump opponents. It relied on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which was ratified after the Civil War and added several of the Union's objectives to the Constitution. Among them was barring disloyal office holders from returning to power. But the entire purpose there was that the federal government was going to stop the states from actually allowing on the ballot people who were insurrectionists, who were part of the Confederacy. Maine had tried to jump on the Colorado bandwagon. Illinois had tried to jump on the Colorado bandwagon. Instead, the Supreme Court ruled 9-0. That this was a bunch of nonsense. Now, when the Supreme Court rules 9-0 on an issue, there's a very, very high chance that this is just bad legal theory. If this had been a 5-4 decision, even a 6-3 decision, you could see people on the left saying, well, you know, it's a conservative Supreme Court majority. The problem for the left, of course, is that this was 9-0. You had people like Ketanji Brown Jackson voting the same way as Clarence Thomas on this particular case. And this has led people like my old friend David French to write a piece in the New York Times lamenting the death of the Constitution. I mean, when David is far to the left of Ketanji Brown Jackson on this issue, you know that people's brains have been boiled by the Trump of all of this. He has an entire piece in the New York Times titled "The Supreme Court Just Erased Part of the Constitution." No, they absolutely didn't. It just requires an enabling act of Congress in order to define insurrection. But again, the brain boiling was across the board. Here are just some of the members of the media who were awash in tears yesterday.
We've learned that it was a 9-0 decision ruling that Donald Trump can be on the ballot in Colorado and other states.
I'm not confident that that will produce a result that's good for American democracy.
This is actually what I had been concerned about. I had been concerned that should it go to the Supreme Court, they would rule this way.
I'd laugh if it weren't so sad.
My next guest says Donald Trump is still an oath-breaking insurrectionist. Do you have confidence in the Supreme Court? Do you think this court is partisan?
The court itself may have overstepped.
The court went way further than it needed to go.
Our colleague Melissa Murray has called this Supreme Court the YOLO court.
The criticism of the court is that they're playing interference.
Not since Bush v. Gore have we seen a court that's had this many opportunities to interfere in the election.
The other thing, stepping back, Anna, is that this is another example among many that are playing out right now of the Supreme Court playing a huge role in American elections.
Now, if you just watched those clips, you would assume this was a 5-4 decision in favor of President Trump. It was 9-0. That's how far outside the legal mainstream these theories were, and that's how far outside the norm the media are, our legacy media. For his part, here's Donald Trump thanking the Supreme Court for the decision.
I want to start by thanking the Supreme Court for its unanimous decision today. It was a very important decision. We're very well crafted, and I think it will go a long way toward bringing our country together, which our country needs. And they worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly on something that will be spoken about 100 years from now and 200 years from now. Extremely important.
Okay, fine. So kind of a normal statement from President Trump. Now, as I say, it wasn't just the legacy media going nuts. Members of the left were going totally insane. I mean, truly crazy yesterday. So you always have to count on the geniuses over at The View to put in their 2 cents of stupidity. So here's Whoopi Goldberg yesterday, very irritated by the Supreme Court of the United States, because as a graduate of Harvard Law School, as a longstanding constitutional jurisprudentialist, Whoopi Goldberg has thoughts.
The thing that bothers me about this, and I know it's probably the right decision, but I don't like that we've normalized this man.
Yeah.
It has really irritated the poo out of me.
Yeah.
That we have normalized him and his bad behavior. I get that the law says, listen, it would be really rough and it should be the Congress that makes these decisions. And yet that's not how we've been acting. We keep saying states laws, we keep giving people the right to make these changes. And then they make a change and they say, well, we don't want this. And everybody says, well, no, of course we shouldn't want this.
Okay, no one knows what she's talking about. Everyone just has terrible images now in their mind because of Whoopi Goldberg. She wasn't the only one to have bathroom thoughts about this particular decision. Keith Olbermann, I know he's been out in the wilderness for a while, but it is worthwhile remembering that Keith Olbermann was once a respected voice on MSNBC. He had a very highly rated show on MSNBC, actually, if you go back about 15 years. And again, it just demonstrates the revolving door between the asylum and MSNBC. Or jail and MSNBC, or should be jail and MSNBC. I mean, Al Sharpton has a show on MSNBC. In any case, Keith Olbermann, who is just out of his mind at this point, he tweeted out, the Supreme Court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. And collectively, the court has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved. I've been working on that Olbermann impression for years. That's, he used to be funny when he was on ESPN. And so he says that the court has to be dissolved because, of course, they are inept at reading comprehension. But he, given his degree from the Cornell School of Agriculture, I'm not kidding, and his legal knowledge gained from years of shouting en fuego on SportsCenter, he has thoughts about the Constitution. Okay, so somebody tweeted back at him, cry more, 9-0. And then he tweeted back something cryptic and odd. Quote, those aren't tears, fascist. They're urine. I'm sure you enjoy being bathed in it. I don't even know what he was going. What was he? What's he even going for there? I don't even know. Like, I'm confused. The guy said to him, cry more. And then is he peeing on his own face? Said, those aren't tears, fascist. They're urine. In his own eyes? It's unbelievable. We're now just doing scenes from like Happy Gilmore. Remember when Shooter McGavin says to Happy Gilmore, I eat pieces of bleep like you for breakfast. And then Happy Gilmore says, you eat pieces of bleep for breakfast? This is where we are now. Solid stuff there from Keith Olbermann. He's peeing in his own eyes to fight Trump. It's a strategy. Meanwhile, the House Democrats are threatening that they're now going to try to pass a bill that would codify Trump's behavior as insurrection under the Constitution. Good luck with that. Representative Jamie Raskin said on Tuesday on CNN that the Supreme Court unanimously overturning that Colorado Supreme Court ruling means that the Congress has to take it up. So Raskin said that he is going to actually now push with a number of my colleagues, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Eric Swalwell. Yeah, he's the one who was stooping a Chinese spy, to revive legislation that we had set up a process by which we could determine that someone who committed insurrection is disqualified by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So the question is whether Mike Johnson would allow us to bring this to the floor of the House. I mean, the answer is no, it's not going to happen. But all of this demonstrates there is a wide gap that has now emerged in life between the radical left and reality. And when even the moderate left or people who have a job, like, say, the radicals on the Supreme Court of the left, who still have a job, which is to read text, that'd be Sonia Sotomayor, who's a far left person, or Ketanji Brown Jackson, a very far left person, or Elena Kagan, who's sort of on the moderate left. Those three people voted in favor of the 9-0 decision here, and there's a complete disconnect between those people and the radical base. And as we've been discussing, because it is the single most important factor in the upcoming 2024 election, Joe Biden has found himself enthralled to the radicals at the expense of the moderates. And that is why he is losing. He is bleeding support from the middle. He's losing support among the base. But the truth is that that support that he's losing among young people, for example, that is a marginal loss of support, considering that's a low propensity voting group in the first place. The people who are very high propensity are independent, college educated people who swing vote. And those people are not looking at Joe Biden and seeing somebody who's on the same page that they are. And so the more Joe Biden is enthralled to his radical left, and the further left that radical left moves, the worse it is for Joe Biden and the Democratic Party. So how far left has the radical left moved? They've moved so far left that now even Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez is not far left enough for them. So in what had to be the most amusing piece of video of the year, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez went to see Dune 2 yesterday with her partner. And she was then chased down the street by fellow left-wing radicals who demanded that she say the word genocide with regard to Israel's behavior in the Gaza Strip, which obviously is not a genocide. And she got very mad. She got very, very angry, did Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, because the revolution always eats its own. So shed a tear for the poor working class revolutionary who is now being beheaded by her own movement. Here was Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez being confronted by people making good trouble against Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez.
You refuse to call it a genocide.
No, I need you to understand that this is not okay.
It's not okay that there's a genocide happening. You're not actively against it.
You're lying.
I'm lying?
You're not.
You went on TV and avoided talking about it.
Hold on.
He was not
active.
For those who can't see, she's walking down the escalator and she's being followed by activists. She stops to confront the activists.
You've been talking in interviews. It's insane. You haven't been calling it a genocide. Don't tell me I'm lying. Then just say it's a genocide. Just say it. Over 30,000 people are dead, AOC. You can't just say it for once. Just say the word. That's it. That's all we want you to say.
She's starting to lose her temper. They're still following her down the street. And then her husband turns around and says, stop.
Cut it, and you're going to cut this, and you're going to clip this so that it's completely out of context. I already said that it was, and y'all are just going to pretend that it wasn't over and over again. It's f***ed up, man. If you're not helping these people, and you're not helping them.
You refuse to.
You're not helping them.
You're not helping them. She's so mad. Oh, man, maybe she'll break into a dance number now. Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. Your genius leading light of the revolution inside Congress. By the way, we should recall that it was AOC who back in 2020 tweeted the following, quote, "The whole point of protesting is to make people uncomfortable. Activists take that discomfort with the status quo and advocate for concrete policy changes. Popular support often starts small and grows. To folks who complain, protest demands make others uncomfortable. That's the point." Ooh, ooh. She was such a spicy revolutionary until the point when she was confronted with her own revolutionary, useful idiot cadre. Again, that gap between normies and the far left is growing. When AOC is now part of the intellectual dark web or something, like AOC has now been left behind. She's in the moderate middle by the far left. And Joe Biden is still chasing those activists down the sidewalk, trying to pander to them while they are busy massaging the prostates of the members of Hamas. You know, good luck to all of you. Good luck to you. You're the ones who jumped in bed with the revolutionaries, and now you're going to have to deal with that. Again, it is amazing how the Democratic Party has moved so far to the left. So Michael Moore, who used to be seen for what he is, a crazy left winger. So Michael Moore, you'll recall in 2004, there's a big controversy. If you remember this far back, I do because I covered politics then. In 2004, there was a huge controversy at the Democratic National Convention because Michael Moore, who was a propagandist documentarian, was seated in a presidential box at the DNC with Jimmy Carter. And that was controversial because Michael Moore's a nutcase. Now Michael Moore has become one of the voices of the Democratic Party because that's how far left the Democratic Party has moved over time. Again, you want to know why people like Joe Rogan and Elon Musk are now talking about voting Republican? It's because the Democratic Party is now enthralled to people like Michael Moore. Michael Moore, again, here he was yesterday talking about Israel and Gaza and suggesting that Joe Biden has to abandon Israel in order to win over his left flank. Again, let's be real about this. The broad spectrum of Americans are much more supportive of Israel than they are of Hamas. But the Democratic Party is kind of split on the issue, which is wild since Hamas is a genocidal terror group that murders gay people, seeks to kill every Jew in sight, hates women and all the rest. Here is Michael Moore suggesting falsely that Joe Biden is enthralled to the authoritarian Bibi, which, again, that's hilarious because Bibi is an elected official in a coalition government with his political opposition who visited Washington, D.C., Benny Gantz did literally yesterday. But here is Michael Moore, dolt.
Do you think Donald Trump is the threat that he is, and Joe Biden is gambling by aligning himself closely with Netanyahu at the risk of American democracy?
Absolutely. And gambling by aligning himself with an authoritarian in Tel Aviv, somebody who is facing a number of felonious charges, who was supposed to stand trial this past fall, and that all got shoved aside because now there's a war. And so we can't put our prime minister on trial. Joe Biden, and I plead with him, do not put Trump back in the White House. I am not going to be able to go on enough shows on TV between now and the election to convince literally millions of young people that you got to vote because Trump's a bad guy.
Michael Moore, by the way, is such an idiot that he literally says in the same interview that Israel should focus its ire not on radical Muslims who just murdered 1,200 of its citizens. Instead, they should focus on the evils of Christians. That's how out of touch these morons are.
According to my knowledge of history, the enemies of Israel who have been persecuted, the Israelis, the Jewish people of this world have been persecuted for 5,000 years. But for the last 2,000 years, most of the persecution has come from white, European-centric Christians. That's been your enemy. No Palestinian helped to build Auschwitz. No Palestinian stood on the docks of New York City when boatloads of Jewish refugees trying to escape the Holocaust came here to be protected by this country and were turned away at the docks in New York and sent back to Germany to die. No Palestinian did that. No Palestinian ran the Spanish Inquisition. Your enemy is not the Palestinian people. It is white Christian European people who have been slaughtering Jews for the last 2,000 years.
Okay, let me take that just one moment there. I have to recover. I'm going to say this in very considered fashion. That's the stupidest f-ing thing I've ever heard in my entire life. That's legitimately the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Yes, it turns out there was a lot of Christian anti-Semitism over the course of the last couple thousand years. That does not forestall the fact that Palestinians crossed a border like a couple of months ago and murdered 1,200 Jews and still are holding 134 hostages, including six Americans. The Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza Strip overwhelmingly support Hamas. That the greatest threat to Jews on planet Earth right now is Palestinians and their supporters. That is just a fact. There is no other. That's simply true. It doesn't mean that every single Palestinian is a terrorist. It doesn't mean that every single Palestinian wants to kill Jews. It does mean that a huge number of Palestinians do want to kill Jews and a huge number of Palestinians support terrorism. That does not mean that civilians should not be treated as civilians, but that happens to be a reality. By the way, his history is just false also. He's an idiot. When he says, well, you know, it's during... Yeah, I didn't see any Palestinians blocking immigration in New York. No, it was Palestinians blocking immigration in British Mandate Palestine, you doof. It was Palestinian Arabs who were rioting against British rule in 1937 after the Peel Commission recommended a partition plan that the Arabs rejected and the Jews accepted. And then the Arabs rioted so much that the British Mandate barred all immigration into British Mandate Palestine by Jews, leaving millions of Jews stuck in Europe. Like, these people just don't know any history. But again, it's these radical morons who are in charge of the Democratic Party. It's amazing. But we should also point out that it's not just that radical idiots have taken control of one of the major parties in the United States or are increasingly taking control of that party. It is also that, you know, who knows that these radical idiots are in control and is using these radical idiots? The Islamists. You know who Hamas's best friends are? People like Ayman Magyeldin on MSNBC or Mehdi Hassan or Michael Moore. Or AOC, people who do the propaganda work for them. These are their favorites. How do we know? Well, here's an example. Yesterday, the Houthi rebels, and again, the Houthi slogan, just to remind everybody, the Houthi slogan is, quote, Allah is the greatest, death to America, death to Israel, a curse upon the Jews, victory to Islam. So they're a bunch of nice people. They say, you know, probably just they're looking for decolonization, the Houthis. An Iran-backed terror group. Well, a senior Houthi leader, according to Politico, has now pitched that Britain's newest member of parliament, George Galloway, be an unlikely mediator in the current Middle East conflict. Why should the new pro-Palestinian MP for Rockdale be a potential player in easing tensions? Because he is an apex useful idiot. It is George Galloway who once suggested that the state of Israel be completely dismantled. He was actually kicked out of labor in 2003. And he was kicked out of labor because he has called for the dismantling of what he called the Zionist state. He walked out of a debate in 2013 after discovering that his opponent was an Israeli citizen. He said, quote, I don't debate with Israelis. He also met with Saddam Hussein. He also suggested in 2012, by the way, that having sex with an unconscious woman, quote, would be bad sexual etiquette, but not rape. Say, solid guy. And that's exactly who the Houthis want. They also have their helpers do the radical Islamists in the media. According to GB News, the BBC has now been criticized after it failed in the most basic of journalistic practices because it used an IRGC reporter as an eyewitness source in reporting on Gaza. And again, so much of the reporting in the Gaza Strip is eyewitness sources who work with or for Hamas. This is just a fact. If you can't get, just for the moment, imagine that you had an area that is so taken over by terrorism that you literally cannot ship in food aid and get it to civilians because terrorists are hijacking the food aid. Now imagine that you're getting information out from that same area. Would you imagine that information is going to be freely trafficked, or do you think the terrorists are going to be controlling the flow of information? The answer is pretty obvious. Terrorists have been controlling the flow of information in the Gaza Strip for legitimately decades at this point. And the entire legacy media just imbibes from that well. The BBC so much so that the corporation used video and eyewitness accounts of a crowd rush incident in an aid convoy in Gaza. And the segment included a report from one Mahmoud Awadaya, described as a journalist at the scene, who lied and said that Israeli troops deliberately shot people attempting to approach trucks of flour in the convoy. He said, quote, Israelis purposefully fired at the men. They're trying to get near the trucks that had the flour. They're fired at directly and preventing people to come near those killed. There's only one problem, which is that Awadaya praised a terrorist attack in 2023, which killed 7 Israelis. And also happens to have a slew of pro-terrorist messaging and associations with figures like Khalil al-Battani, a senior member of the paramilitary group Palestinian Islamic Jihad. The same legacy media that will still print reports doubting whether there was mass rape at the Nova Music Festival on October 7th. Those same media are the useful idiots of the radical Islamists, and they also happen to be the people who Joe Biden believes he is answerable to. And that is why Joe Biden is so far off the track of what the American people want from him. He is so far off the track of what the American people want from him. They wanted moderation and decency, and instead they got this radical garbage with a bumbling old fool at the top of the pile. That's what they got. Speaking of radical garbage with the bumbling old fool at the top, according to the Daily Wire, the Biden administration has now empowered a professional activist to travel the globe on the taxpayer dime to push transgenderism and gender ideology. From Australia to Brazil, South Africa to Sweden, Jessica Stern travels across the world attending so-called pride events as the State Department's special envoy to advance the human rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and intersex persons. Stern, who has boasted she is the highest-ranking lesbian woman in the Biden administration, is paid an annual salary of over $180,000 and tasked with promoting a far-left view on sex and gender, lobbying foreign governments, and assisting activist organizations. She was appointed by Biden in September 2021. Her work has gone largely unnoticed by the media as she bolsters the president's broader effort to leverage the might of the federal agencies and their bureaucracies in service of a far-left agenda. She travels as special envoy, and they've taken her to at least 22 countries, including Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Botswana, Canada, Germany, Greece, India, Lithuania, Malaysia, Mauritius, Mexico, Nepal, the Netherlands, Panama, Peru, the Philippines, South Africa, Sweden, Switzerland, Thailand, and Vietnam. By the way, I'm just going to point out here how many of those countries are of the countries that I just mentioned. How many of them are, you know, radical Muslim ruled? I noticed there were zero in the Middle East. I noticed that. So she's happy to preach LGBT politics pretty much everywhere, except for where the Muslims are. Malaysia is the only country in this list, I believe, that's Muslim. She said, good foreign policy is inclusive foreign policy. That means having senior experts on LGBTQI rights. So why is the Biden administration trotting around at taxpayer expense this lady to various gay pride parades around the globe? Because the State Department says, quote, it is committed to promoting and protecting the freedom, dignity, and equality of all persons, including transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming persons around the world. This is what American exceptionalism has come to mean. American exceptionalism is not things like private property ownership. It is not anything like free speech. It is not limited government. American exceptionalism apparently is LGBTQI minus divided by sign politics. That is the most important thing that the Biden administration can be pushing at this point. And again, this goes to one of the central problems between left and right today. I think that it is fair to state that if you go back to, say, even the 1990s, there was large crossover between what the left in this country wanted and what the right in this country wanted. During the Clinton era, that's why you could get things done sometimes. Because what people wanted, generally speaking, was a government that was limited in its intervention in daily life. People still wanted solid families. There was some arguing around the edges with regard to, say, things like benefits for same-sex couples. But there was no talk in the mid-1990s. In fact, everybody was talking the opposite about gay marriage. The idea was maybe civil unions. And civil unions were really just about granting legal rights like hospital visitation or rights in wills to gay couples. But there was no idea of marriage as a substitution for gay couples for traditional marriage. That was off the table in the 90s. Even the left at that point, with regard to abortion, for example, the Clinton line was safe, legal, and rare. There was still crossover in which people recognized that abortion was a great evil. And now things have completely broken apart. They've completely broken apart. And because there is no common vision in the United States anymore of what even constitutes a good, that means that you will have administrations promoting around the globe things that are not agreed to by the vast majority of Americans. Most Americans are not interested in paying envoys to go promote transgenderism in Malaysia. This is not something we think of as a core American value, nor should we think of that as a core American value. That is not what American exceptionalism is. But for the left, it is. And so they've redefined what it is to be a good American. This is why you've seen so much ire in the United States. Again, when you have a set of common values, even if they are broadly writ, even if there's a lot of play in the joints, but you still have those common values, you can have a country. But when those fall away, then what exactly do you have left? The answer is not much. I mean, the fact is that this administration has decided that it is going to promote what it calls democracy, but not really, because it sort of depends on where you are in the world, whether they support the democracy or not. Right now, the Biden administration is promoting a tyrannical Islamic government, the Palestinian Authority, and its aspirations above the interests of an ally of the United States that happens to be democratic Israel. So when they talk about democracy, it just everyone knows they don't really mean it. So what exactly is the Biden administration pushing around? They're not pushing property ownership. They're not really pushing free markets. Joe Biden is looking for global baseline taxes of 15%. So what exactly are those American exceptional values that Joe Biden is pushing? He can't define them. He's let the left define them for him. And Americans don't like that leftist definition. In just one second, we're going to get to the most shocking story of the day. This with regard to WPATH. WPATH is the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. That organization has been used as the basis for pretty much all trans propaganda in the United States for the last 10, 15 years. We're going to get to the corruption of that organization in just one moment. First, Thursday night, join the Daily Wire backstage. Matt Walsh, Michael Moles, Andrew Klavan, Jeremy Boring, and I. We all watch and react to the 2024 State of the Union live on Daily Wire Plus. We will break down the State of the Union as it happens, and of course, we'll answer your questions. It's an experience you will not find anywhere else. You can watch it all live Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, on the Daily Wire app and dailywire.com. It should be exciting because we are all waiting to see if Joe Biden survives the evening. Check us out at dailywire.com or on the Daily Wire app Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Meanwhile, the biggest breaking news of the day is a piece from Gerald Posner in the New York Post. Newly leaked files from the world's leading transgender healthcare organization reveal it is pushing hormonal and surgical transitions for minors, including stomach-wrenching experimental procedures designed to create sexless bodies that resemble department store mannequins. The World Professional Association for Transgender Health documents demonstrate it's controlled by gender ideologues who push aside concerns about whether children and adolescents can consent to medical treatments that WPATH members privately acknowledge often have devastating and permanent side effects. Yet the U.S. government, American doctors, and prominent organizations nonetheless rely on WPATH guidelines for advice on treating our youth. The files, jaw-dropping conversations from a WPATH internal messaging board, and a video of an identity evolution workshop panel were provided to journalist Michael Schellenberg, who shared the documents with me. Schellenberg's nonprofit Environmental Progress will release a scathing summary report comparing WPATH promotion of the pseudoscientific surgical destruction of healthy genitals in vulnerable people to the mid-20th century use of lobotomies, the pseudoscientific surgical destruction of healthy brains. When the organization adopted in 2022 its current standards of care, which is relied upon by the NIH, the WHO, and every major American medical and psychiatric association, it scrapped a draft chapter about ethics and removed minimum age requirements for children starting puberty blockers or undergoing sexual modification surgeries. It had previously recommended 16 to start hormones and 17 for surgeries. Not surprisingly, age comes up frequently in the WPATH files, from concerns about whether a developmentally delayed 13-year-old can start on puberty blockers to whether the growth of a 10-year-old girl will be stunted by hormones. During one conversation, a member asked for advice about a 14-year-old patient, a boy who identified as a girl and had begun transitioning at 4. The child insisted on a vaginoplasty, a surgery that removes the penis, testicles, and scrotum and repositions tissue to create a non-functioning pseudo-vagina. It requires a lifetime of dilation. Was he too young at 14? Marcy Bowers, the WPATH president, said she continued, any age limit arbitrary. By the way, she is a he, Marcy Bowers. But she, air quotes, would not do it. Why? The tissue is too immature, dilation routine too critical. In lay terms, that means that boys are too young. They don't have enough penile tissue for the surgery. And the surgeon has to harvest intestinal lining to build a fake vagina. The highest profile patient of the person who is the president of WPATH is Jazz Jennings. WPATH, unfortunately, has become the central organization in pushing, quote unquote, transgender standards of care. It's used by the federal government, and they are totally full of crap. And this, unfortunately, is the reality of our medical establishment. It's been amazing to see how every institution has discredited itself in this country over the course of the last 15 to 20 years. It's totally insane. The one institution you thought would not discredit itself is science, because after all, science is held to the scientific method. You have a hypothesis. You test it. If the test doesn't work, then you go back to the drawing board. But science has become an arbitrary tool of political professionals. That's particularly true where the science is unclear. So it used to be that the first rule was do no harm. Now the first rule is do as much harm as possible so long as you can obfuscate the results for long enough. That's what WPATH promotes. The litany of transition surgery side effects did not stop WPATH, according to the New York Post, from endorsing far more radical nullification surgeries for patients who do not feel either male or female and identify only as non-binary. Several dozen so-called degendering surgeries are designed to create a sexless, smooth cosmetic appearance that is unknown in nature. There's even an experimental bigenital surgery that attempts to construct a second set of genitals. WPATH has enshrined this concept into its standard of care. So, in other words, they want you to look like a Ken doll or a Barbie doll now. And this is supposed to be standard of care. Totally insane crap. But, again, being pushed by the federal government. Rachel Levine, the Assistant Secretary of Health, who is, of course, a biological man, is a WPATH member and has lavished praise on the organization, saying, quote, it assesses the full scale of the science and provides substantive, rigorously analyzed, peer-reviewed recommendations to the medical community on how best to care for patients who are transgender or gender non-binary. It's free of any agenda other than to ensure that medical decisions are informed by science. That is a lie. That is a lie. But so much of what we are seeing promoted by the federal government these days is just lies designed to promote a radical and insane agenda. And meanwhile, speaking of a radical and insane agenda, a federal appeals court has now correctly allowed Texas to put forward its own immigration law since the federal government won't do it. According to CNN, a federal appeals court granted a temporary stay of a lower court's decision to block the enforcement of a controversial Texas immigration law. The state government was going to implement Senate Bill 4, which would allow state law enforcement authorities to arrest and detain people they suspect of entering the country illegally. So very much like in Arizona Senate Bill 1070 back a decade ago when Barack Obama was president, which allowed Arizona to arrest people for illegal immigration. And that was invalidated by the Supreme Court. Well, now this is going up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has put it on hold at the moment. So we'll see how that is adjudicated. It's the Biden administration, by the way, that's saying that Texas should not be allowed to arrest people for illegal immigration, which means they're actively intervening to even stop other authorities from fighting the problem of illegal immigration. Meanwhile, the Biden administration continues to fib about all this. John Kirby, who's the national security spokesperson and really the de facto competent press secretary for the White House since Karine Jean-Pierre is terrible at her job, he was on Fox News yesterday suggesting that Biden has not disengaged from the Border Patrol, despite the fact that the prior head of the Border Patrol said he literally never had a conversation with either Biden or Kamala Harris. Here's John Kirby.
John, how has he never spoken to, and you know what, we did some reporting on this earlier today, not only Raul Ortiz, the former chief of the Border Patrol, but the current chief of the Border Patrol, Chief Owens, who you pointed out he did meet with in Brownsville, but from what we can find out, they had never spoken before that. How is that possible?
Well, the president's engaged with the DHS. He's engaged with leadership there.
But
he's
why not the Border Patrol?
He's engaged with the Border Patrol. Martha, he was just down there at Brownsville meeting and talking to those folks directly and hearing from them.
But he never met
about
the
situation on the ground.
Or current chief. The current chief he just met has been president for 3 years. Just met him the other day.
He again, is engaged with everybody at DHS, including the Border Patrol, down there at Brownsville, talking to him on the ground, hearing from them directly about what their concerns are.
Okay, well, the problem is nobody believes that. Nobody believes that. You know what Democrats should be doing? They should now be imitating the example of John Fetterman in Pennsylvania. He was elected. He almost did a reverse Biden. So Biden was elected as a moderate and is governing as a radical. John Fetterman was elected as a radical and is governing as a moderate. So John Fetterman comes into office and he immediately starts pushing, for example, things like border control. He starts suggesting that he is on Israel's side in its war against a genocidal terrorist group, Hamas. And guess what? His approval rating with Democrats in Pennsylvania is 76-7 in the latest Quinnipiac poll. He's not afraid of his own base. And that means that he's winning. Because guess what? Joe Biden doesn't need college students in Michigan to vote for him. He needs moderates in Michigan to vote for him. But he's not doing it. Here's John Fetterman going off on the border.
At least I, as a Democrat, you know, am willing and eager to go stronger than the border deal that was here. It might be actually appropriate given the circumstance here at the border.
John Fetterman making the smart play, moving toward the center. And while the left is trying to proclaim that he's wildly unpopular, that is simply not true. It is not true. John Fetterman is one of the more popular figures in Pennsylvania politics at this point because he didn't do the dumb thing. Joe Biden did the dumb thing. He decided to steer way out to his left, and he's going to pay the price for that electorally. There's a reason he is trailing in all the swing states. There's a reason independents are turning toward Donald Trump. Donald Trump has locked up 97% of the people who voted for him in 2024. Joe Biden has locked up 83% of the people who voted for him in 2020. Those numbers, not good enough for Joe Biden. Well, meanwhile, speaking of radicals who can't get their own cities under control, New York has had increased crime. Why? Because they decided to release people without bail, because that's the stupidest thing that you could possibly do with criminals. It turns out fighting crime is actually super easy. You take criminals and you put them in a place where they can't harm anyone else. Call it prison, for example. And then you just put them there and leave them there. That's what you do with criminals. And then they aren't in public harming other people. I know this is like incredibly difficult stuff that no one can figure out except for every civilization in the history of humanity. But we can't figure it out. It's a mystery wrapped in an enigma. How do you solve crime? Probably you should just take the criminals. You should probably have them take a trip, quick trip down to the jail. After like a day, probably release them back in. Probably they've learned their lesson and it'll all be great. According to the New York Post, Remember when politicians were touting the success of bail reform? Remember the meaningless and deceptive numbers they threw out? New York City Comptroller Brad Lander claims in a report only 1% of people released on bail under bail reform are rearrested for a violent felony while their case is pending. And then State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said the number was 2%. Well, a new study of bail reform outside New York City in the suburbs and upstate, prepared by John Jay College of Criminal Justice Data Collaborative for Justice, shows 66% of people released under bail reform who had a recent prior arrest were rearrested within 2 years of their release. 67% of defendants who had a recent prior felony arrest in the past year who were released were also rearrested within 2 years of their arraignment. Almost half of those were rearrested for a felony. Wait, you mean that criminals do crime? That's crazy. I was told that criminals are victims of the system and that, after all, they shoplift because they need bread, in the words of that genius Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. By the way, it's worth noting here that the center that wrote this study were vocal supporters of the bail reform laws from the very beginning. Arrests outside New York City decreased from 184,000 in 2019 to 154,000 in 2022, even as crimes increased. In fact, there were 17,000 more crimes in 2022 than 2019, but 30,000 fewer arrests. Well, I mean, there's a shock. Again, amazing. You mean when you release criminals onto the streets, that makes more? No, no. Well, California is doing the same thing. According to the Wall Street Journal, what would happen if lawmakers reinvented the criminal justice system to target systemic racism instead of crime? California is about to find out. California passed a law in 2020 called the California Racial Justice Act, which means every felon serving time in the state prison and jail can now retroactively challenge his conviction and sentencing on the grounds of systemic bias. So the prisoner doesn't need to show that the police officer, prosecutor, judge, or juror was racist. All they have to demonstrate is that in the past, criminal suspects of his race were arrested, prosecuted, or sentenced more often or more severely than members of other racial groups. So, in other words, if you're a black felon in prison, you're going to be able to sue to lower your sentence based on systemic factors. Now, every examination of sentencing is complicated by the realities, which is that sentencing differs by not only the crime, but the behavior during the crime for each and every person who's engaged in a crime. And so simply taking a baseline of black people are sentenced for the same crimes longer than white people doesn't take into account any of the external factors. Other crimes that were pled down, criminal histories of the suspects, behavior during the arrest. In fact, comparing these two things is sort of like suggesting that women earn less than men on average in terms of salary, ignoring things like how many hours are worked or what jobs people are in. As the Wall Street Journal points out, court testimony now sounds like a critical race studies course. When a felon in San Francisco contested his arrest and prosecution for having a loaded handgun in his car, a race expert testified the arresting officer's use of the phrase high crime area demonstrated bias against people of color. The appeals court allowed the felon's claim to proceed. The same expert who testified this, by the way, also testified that whites are psychopaths whose behavior represents an underlying biologically transmitted proclivity. This is according to Heather McDonald writing about all of this. So I can't imagine why crime is going to go up in the state of California. I can't imagine. Again, pursue stupid policies, receive stupid consequences. Alrighty, folks, coming up, we will be joined by Abigail Schreier. She has a brand new book titled Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up. It's fascinating and taboo. If you're not a member, become a member. Use code Shapiro at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans. Click that link in the description and join us.